This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Lynn Mark with Sharit Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning on The Morning Run. Now, US indices rose on the back of a strong US jobs report on Friday, as well as the fact that the US unemployment rate fell to a 49-year low of 3.6%. The Dow Jones closed 0.8% higher, the S&P 500 was up 1%, and the Nasdaq shot up 1.6%.
Now, looking at the Asian market, on Friday, Nikkei was closed, Shanghai Composite ended 0.5% higher, and Kospi fell 0.7%. KLCI closed 0.3% higher, led by gains in the telco stock. So, and now taking a look at the headlines overnight and from the weekend, the Brunei Sultan Hassan Al-Bolkiah on Sunday extended a moratorium on the death penalty to cover new Sharia legislation introduced last month. The Sharia Penal Code or the SPCO introduced on April 3rd imposed harsh sentences on certain offences like death penalty for rape, caning, lesbian sex, as well as amputation for theft, among others.
And there was global outcry over this law. I mean, there were boycotts over Brunei-owned luxury hotels like the one in London, I can't remember its name suddenly, and celebrity protests. We had George Clooney, Elton John and Ellen DeGeneres among Hollywood elite who called for a boycott.
Hyatt, I think.
Quite a number of luxury hotels. Okay. I think there were
Dorchester
nine of them.
Dorchester in London, sorry.
There
Dorchester.
We go. So okay. I guess this was this. It kind of feels like this decision to place the moratorium on the death penalty from the Brunei government. It feels like a response to that. But I think we did find that there was not going to be very much economic repercussions to Brunei as a state, so much as it would be towards the Sultan of Brunei, because most of those hotels are privately owned.
Yes, it's also just very bad public relations, right, to have a headline like this.
Yeah, I mean, and that's today. I mean, you will also, you know, you could also look at long-term repercussions as well as a result of this. And I think in the globalized world, I think it's important to really listen what people really have to say.
And then moving on to North Korea, it confirmed that it conducted strike drills on Saturday to test various missile components. And it was overseen by their leader, Kim Jong-un, at increasing the... And the reason for it was increasing the combat ability of North Korea. Typically, Trump reacted to the news on Saturday via Twitter, saying that, "I believe that Kim Jong-un fully realizes the economic potential of North Korea and will do nothing to interfere or end it."
Ominous. So also just a few hours ago, Donald Trump ramped up pressure on China to finalize a trade deal during talks in Washington this week by threatening to more than double tariffs on $200 billion worth of goods from China. Now, the president tweeted that tariffs of 10% on certain goods would rise to 25% on Friday, and $325 billion worth of untaxed goods could face 25% duties shortly. Now, the countries have seemed near to striking a trade deal in recent weeks and are due to meet this week in Washington, D.C. So for some insight into how markets could react to this, we have on the line Freddie Lim, the Chief Investment Officer of Stashaway. Freddie, thanks so much for joining us this morning. The U.S. and China are heading into another round of talks this week with rumors that a deal could be in the offing. But have President Trump's overnight tweets dimmed expectations for a resolution?
Let's not forget that the U.S. Did signal several times that they are prepared to walk away if there's a lack of progress with China. And in fact, as you mentioned, on Sunday, Trump tweeted a couple of tweets where he's going to double existing tariffs and to impose a 25% tariff on a further $325 billion of imports from China. So the stakes have been up, but as you know, in the past, Trump has a habit of upping his threats and walking back on it. Mm. We all know that Trump barely needed a deal to show the win at home, and also into the 2020 general election in the U.S. Would it be advisable to make American consumer pay a lot for imports? That might not be. So let's not be totally pessimistic here. Let's be cautiously optimistic.
And Freddie, how should we read this latest U.S. jobs report, which saw unemployment fall to its lowest point since 1969? Does it vindicate the Fed's recent call to hold interest rates?
Well, 263,000 jobs were added in April, and the unemployment rate is at the lowest since January 1970. And at the same time, hourly pays went up. it's a really, really good situation for the U.S. economy. So in a way, the Fed is vindicated in a sense that they're holding rates to observe more. And you know, to go from rate hikes to being on hold, that itself is a big move. I think the market at the moment would be disappointed because the market probably overread the last Fed statement and were starting the pricing for rate cuts. I would say that we will have some disappointment here right this way.
Freddie, there has been controversy around the Attorney General's William Barr's take on the Mueller report. What are your thoughts on the likelihood of Trump's impeachment?
Well, there's little support for that among Republicans still, although Trump is really testing the patience of even those among his parties, trade talks and cajoling Mueller, like Mueller telling him not to attend to testify in Congress, and possibly cozy relationship with Attorney General William Barr. So there's a lot of patience testing going forward, which sort of incentivize a lot of new up-and-coming leaders in the Democratic Party to try to find avenues to impeach Trump. I would be very honest here that it may not be very good for the Democrats to do so because it will completely dilute their message into the general election next year. They need to come up with very good teams and issues to focus on and to promote to the voters. But any move to try to impeach Trump would drown all those measures out. So at the end of the day, it's really 50-50, unfortunately.
And Freddie, this week, central banks in Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, Thailand, as well as the Philippines will all decide on monetary policy amid gathering signs that the region is going to start cutting interest rates soon. So what are your expectations and how much room do you think central banks have to manoeuvre?
Well, these countries have a commonality. They all face slowing economies and inflation is low, which in combination opens the door ajar for rate cuts. However, before I go on, I would say that for Australia, maybe the RBA would observe a little more because their unemployment numbers has been resilient and business conditions indicators, such as those produced by the National Australian Bank, have also stabilized since December. So, and you know, you are just 10 days out from a federal election. So to really cut rates and start a new cycle might be optically be seen as biased towards a new administration. So that may factor in. However, having said that, New Zealand will probably cut first because its jobs has really jobs market has really declined. So there's some room for New Zealand, although the you know the level of rates there is not that high for them to do much. Which brings me to Malaysia, Thailand, and the Philippines. These are countries where they're open, they are small rented, they can be more flexible than the bigger developed markets in fine-tuning their rates policy. So I would say there is some more leeway in the case of Malaysia and Philippines, more so than Australia and New Zealand.
Right, and thank you so much, Freddie. That was Freddie Lim, the Chief Investment Officer of Stashaway, discussing central bank policy in the region, as well as the issues in the US. So I think one of the things that Freddie said was that he's cautiously optimistic rather than pessimistic, since it seems that Trump has a bit of a track record of making large threats and then rolling back on them.
He rules by tweets.
That's right.
Which changes by the day.
And also he wrote that book, The Art of the Deal, if I'm not mistaken.
That's true.
Right?
So he's actually already given us his playbook, right?
There you go. I mean, so it's not hard to tell. So I think commentary next time would be based on that.
Yes. And so if we just take a quick look at the possible effects of Trump's latest threat to raise the tariffs, it will affect more than 5,000 products if it goes through, made by Chinese farms and factories, from fresh and frozen food to chemicals, textiles, electronics, as well as consumer goods. Now, so far, the U.S. has imposed tariffs of $250 billion worth of Chinese goods, having accused the country of unfair trade practices.
Yeah. You know, in return, I think Beijing has hit back with a duty is worth about 110 billion of U.S. good. Saying that U.S. for this is for the U.S. starting the largest trade war in the economy history. So, I mean, with Freddie mentioned with election coming. In 2020 coming up soon, so there's a lot of political pressure ahead of it, and this re-election is this bid to satisfy China's hawk, and while also resolving the trade tension that have hurt many agricultural constituency and cast a shadow over the commodity market.
Yes, because one of Trump's major support blocks was the farming belt in the US, and they are some of the groups worst hit by the trade tariffs.
Yes, and ironically, I mean, Trump is this very politically divergent character, right? So at the moment, these trade talks are very much winner-take-all kind of scenario, which is never a good way to start any negotiations.
Because compromise should be key here, even if compromising never necessarily pleases everyone at the table. Okay, we'll be right back. So keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.